Welcome. My name is Dr. Elliot Godofsky. I'm the director of the University Hepatitis Center in Sarasota, Florida. This is an IAS USA module on treatment of hepatitis C in patients with HIV co-infection. Today, I will be covering several key concepts in the treatment of co-infected persons with HIV and hepatitis C. I'll be covering the evolution of hepatitis C treatments in co-infected patients, the timing of treatment, including patient evaluation and selection, a brief overview of important drug-drug interactions and therapeutic considerations that need to be assessed in patients already receiving HIV antiretrovirals, and finally conclude with a summary of the current American Association for the Study of Liver Diseases, IDSA, IAS USA treatment recommendations. Evolution of hepatitis C treatment in HIV co-infection. Historically, co-infected patients have responded less well to interferon ribavirin-based hepatitis C treatments. This slide compares sustained virologic response rates of pegylated interferon and ribavirin regimens in some of the larger co-infection trials, with rates in a pegylated interferon ribavirin weight-based registration trial in mono-infected patients published in 2002 by Dr. Michael Fried. While in some of the co-infection trials, ribavirin dosing was lower and not weight-based, or the treatment duration was longer than 48 weeks compared to mono-infection trials, genotype 1 co-infected patients responded considerably less well than their mono-infected counterparts. The same trend, to a lesser degree, is seen in genotypes 2 and 3 co-infected patients. Additionally, tolerability and drug-drug interactions of pegylated interferon and ribavirin-based regimens have been consistently more challenging in co-infected patients, and poor response rates have often correlated with lower CD4 cell counts. In the next slide, we look at the addition of first-generation hepatitis C protease inhibitors to a regimen of pegylated interferon and ribavirin in genotype 1 co-infected patients. Following the success of hepatitis C protease inhibitors in mono-infected patients, these first-generation agents were found to be nearly as efficacious in co-infected patients when combined with interferon and ribavirin. The first pilot study to investigate efficacy and safety of telaprevir-based therapy in treatment-naive genotype 1 co-infected patients included patients with CD4 counts over 500 cells per millimeter cubed who were hepatitis C treatment naive and were receiving either a favarance-based or boosted atazanavir-based antiretroviral therapy. The overall sustained virologic response rate of 74% in this trial was comparable to that seen in treatment-naive hepatitis C mono-infected patients and superior to the SVR rates of the pegylated interferon ribavirin control arm. Consequently, triple therapy became the new standard of treatment in genotype 1 co-infected patients. Similarly, on the left side of the slide, in a study evaluating the efficacy and safety of boceprevir-based triple therapy in treatment-naive genotype 1 co-infected patients, a substantial improvement in overall SVR rates was seen compared with the pegylated interferon ribavirin control arm, 63% versus 29%. After 48 weeks of treatment. Recently, two new direct-acting antiviral agents have been approved for the treatment of hepatitis C. The first is cimeprevir, a protease inhibitor. It is a multi-genotypic NS3-4A protease inhibitor. Q-day dosing is possible. It has a very low barrier to resistance, has several drug-drug interactions with antiretrovirals for HIV, which will be discussed later. Common side effects include rash and photosensitivity. The drug is not currently approved for use in HIV patients, and HIV is not a special population here. Sofosfavir is a pan-genotypic NS5B nucleoside drug. It is dosed daily. It has an exceptional barrier to resistance. There are no significant drug-drug interactions, rare adverse events on therapy, and it is approved for hepatitis C HIV co-infection as a special population. This slide shows the first study giving sofosbuvir plus pegylated interferon and ribavirin for 12 weeks in co-infected patients, similar to the neutrino trial in mono-infected patients. In this pilot study, the highly effective hepatitis C mono-infection neutrino study regimen of pegylated interferon, ribavirin, and sofosbuvir was used in a similar manner with co-infected patients. 23 non-cirrhotic genotypes 1 through 4 co-infected patients received sofosbuvir 400 milligrams a day, ribavirin, weight-based at either 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams a day, and pegylated interferon weekly for 12 weeks. Patients were required to be on stable antiretroviral therapy with HIV suppression. The primary efficacy endpoint was sustained virologic response at 12 weeks after discontinuation of therapy, and safety assessments included HIV RNA and CD4 counts and percentages. As can be seen on the slide, most patients had exceptional response to therapy. Patients had rapid on-treatment HCV suppression, 22 out of 23 patients, or 96% at week 2, had RNA below the limit of quantitation for hepatitis C virus. There were no virologic breakthroughs during therapy. The overall sustained virologic response rate at 12 weeks was 91%. The most frequently reported AEs were fatigue, anemia, neutropenia, and thrombocytopenia. No HIV viral breakthroughs or reductions in CD4 cell count percentage occurred. Discontinuations due to adverse events was very low for an interferon-containing regimen at 9%. This study demonstrated that therapy with sofosbuvir, pegylated interferon, and ribavirin could obtain high SVR rates comparable to mono-infected patients with good tolerability and no negative impact on HIV parameters. The next slide shows a larger study called PHOTON-2. In this study, which was an open-label trial investigating sofosbuvir in combination with ribavirin in HIV hepatitis C co-infected patients with genotypes 1, 2, and 3. Compensated cirrhotics were allowed. There were three treatment arms. Treatment-naive genotype 1 patients received 24 weeks of therapy with sofosbuvir and ribavirin. Treatment-naive genotypes 2 and 3 patients received 12 weeks of therapy with sofosbuvir and ribavirin, and that's shown here in the graphic. And treatment-experienced patients, genotypes 2 and 3, also received 24 weeks of treatment, and those patients are not shown in this graphic. The study really cast a wide net with regards to patient population, including allowable antiretrovirals of boosted atazanavir, darunavir, efavirenz, rilpivirine, or rilpivirine, in combination with an NRTI backbone of tenofovir and FTC. All patients had stable HIV disease on and off antiretrovirals. Antiretroviral-treated patients had CD4 counts over 200. Antiretroviral-untreated patients had CD4 counts over 500. The results shown on this slide show the overall SVR rates in genotypes 1, 2, and 3 were 76, 88, and 67% respectively. SVR rates did not appear to be affected by baseline hepatitis C RNA level, IL-28B genotype, presence of cirrhosis, age, gender, or race. There was no resistance detected in virological failures. There were two patients who experienced HIV breakthrough. Discontinuations was low in this population, and in a small number of patients receiving boosted atazanavir, hyperbilirubinemia was seen in approximately 12% of a grade 3 adverse event. Now, data from the treatment experience group of genotype 2 and 3 patients treated for 24 weeks showed relatively little bump in the response rate in genotype 2, up to 92% from 88%. However, genotype 3 patients treated for 24 weeks increased SVR from 67% to 88%. Here again, we see excellent response rates in co-infected patients treated with a completely interferon-based regimen. This study published by Dr. Dietrich shows a combination therapy with semeprevir plus pegylated interferon and ribavirin in co-infected patients with genotype 1. This was an international phase 3 open-label trial to evaluate the safety and efficacy of semeprevir in over 100 HIV-positive patients with hepatitis C. Most patients were men, were white, in 82%, 14% were black, approximately 90% were on antiretrovirals, almost all had an undetectable HIV RNA. Antiretrovirals was an NRTI backbone plus either raltegravir, rilpivirine, maraviroc, or enfevuride. The median CD4 count of all the patients was 429. Treatment arms included response-guided, therapy-eligible, naive, and relapsed patients treated initially for 12 weeks with semeprevir, PEG, and RIBA, and then for 12 weeks just with PEG and ribavirin versus a 24-week arm that was not response-guided therapy where semeprevir, pegylated interferon, ribavirin was given for the first 24 weeks and then just pegylated interferon, ribavirin for the next 24 weeks. And there was a null or partial responder arm treated with triple therapy for 24 weeks, followed by 24 weeks of pegylated interferon and ribavirin. Cirrhotic patients were included in this arm. The SVR12 weights in co-infected patients were similar to hepatitis C mono-infected patients. The rates were high regardless of baseline fibrosis score, IL-28B. Haplotype was predictive of response typical of protease inhibitor interferon-based regimens. Genotype 1B response rates were better. However, the presence of Q80K mutation, usually indicative of decreased response to semeprevir, pegylated interferon, and ribavirin in genotype 1A patients did not seem to impact response in these patients. 89% of patients were eligible for response-guided treatment and ended treatment at week 24. The safety profile, again, similar to that seen in mono-infected patients. The next slide shows the COSMOS study, which was a study done in hepatitis C mono-infected patients, but has implications for treating co-infected patients. This was a phase 2 randomized open-label study evaluating the efficacy and safety of semeprevir, a protease inhibitor, sofosfavir, a nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitor, and ribavirin, with or without ribavirin, for either 12 or 24 weeks in genotype 1 patients. There were two cohorts. The first had null responders to PEG and RIBA with low Medivir scores indicative of myofibrosis. The second cohort was treatment naive patients and no responders with advanced fibrosis F3 and F4. The results are shown here. In cohort 1, SVR rates range from 93 to 96% and from 79 to 93% with 12 and 24 weeks of therapy respectively. Relapse in this regimen in cohort 1 was associated with Q80K mutation, but the majority of patients with Q80K were responders, so this perhaps is not a determinant in this situation. In cohort 2, the response rates were ranging from 93 to 100%, regardless of prior exposure to interferon and ribavirin. Overall, this study shows dramatic response rates to sofosfavir and semeprevir, with as little as 12 weeks of treatment in patients with and without cirrhosis, and showing no real benefit of the addition of ribavirin in these cohorts. Timing of treatment. With respect to co-infection, it's important to consider patient selection and who to treat. All hepatitis C HIV co-infected patients are candidates for therapy. It's important to consider comorbid conditions that may limit life expectancy or increase the risk associated with therapy. HIV disease should be stable with or without antiretroviral therapy. If interferon-based regimens are embarked on, then CD4 counts should be over 200. And it's important to remember that interferon can exacerbate pre-existing mental illness, and those patients might need psychiatric evaluation before embarking on therapy. Decompensated cirrhotic patients should be referred to medical practitioners with expertise, and substance abuse needs to be evaluated prior to treatment. There are specific risks associated with deferring therapy in co-infected patients. There is an accelerated rate of hepatitis C-related fibrosis progression in co-infected patients with increasing immune deficiency. The progression to cirrhosis may be as high as threefold higher in co-infected versus mono-infected patients. The risk of decompensated liver disease may be as high as sixfold higher in co-infected versus mono-infected patients. Hepatocellular carcinoma, or primary cancer of the liver, occurs at an earlier age in co-infected patients and is more aggressive with decreased survival. Co-infected patients also have reduced access to liver transplant and perhaps even a reduced survival after transplantation. It is important to remember that antiretroviral therapy may delay liver disease progression. What's shown on the next slide is exactly the instance of antiretroviral therapy impacting mortality in hepatitis C HIV co-infection. This is a study looking at 285 co-infected patients with respect to their liver-related mortality, whether they received antiretroviral therapy or no antiretroviral therapy. As can be seen on the slide, overall mortality and liver-related mortality was markedly improved in patients who received antiretrovirals. Therefore, antiretroviral therapy has been shown to slow fibrosis progression and decrease mortality in co-infected patients. This is the ALIVE study, which looks at a prospective cohort of hepatitis C-infected individuals to investigate whether persons with HIV infection develop hepatitis C-related liver disease at a younger age than similar persons without HIV. This study indicated here shows that FibroScan scores, which is a measurement of liver fibrosis, are significantly higher in patients with hepatitis C-HIV co-infection compared to hepatitis C mono-infection. In addition, co-infected patients appear to have liver fibrosis similar to hepatitis C mono-infected patients who are nearly 10 years older. Stated a different way, this study illustrates co-infected patients are at increased risk for advanced fibrosis in shorter periods of time than are mono-infected patients. The next slide looks at the incidence of liver decompensation in patients with co-infection versus hepatitis C mono-infection. This was a very large cohort of U.S. veterans, approximately 10,000 people in the study who had HIV, hepatitis C co-infected patients who were on stable antiretroviral therapy compared with hepatitis C mono-infected. All patients had active virus indicating active infection and had not been treated for hepatitis C. At 10 years, the incidence of liver decompensation was significantly greater at 7.4% in co-infected patients versus 4.8% in mono-infected patients. Co-infected patients who maintained a low or undetectable HIV viral load on antiretroviral therapy still had higher rates of liver decompensation compared with mono-infected patients. Data from this study suggest that even in the era of heart therapy, there remains a substantially higher risk of disease progression in co-infected patients, stressing the urgency of timely hepatitis C treatment in co-infected patient populations. The next slide looks at hepatitis C treatment and the incidence of end-stage liver disease, hepatocellular carcinoma, and death. The primary goals of successful hepatitis C treatment are eradication of active virus and reduction of downstream complications such as end-stage liver disease, hepatocellular carcinoma, and death. Multiple studies in mono-infected patients have demonstrated these beneficial effects in patients obtaining an SVR. The same paradigm appears to hold true for co-infection. In this prospective cohort of over 600 co-infected patients at the Johns Hopkins HIV clinic, follow-up over a median period of 8 years disclosed that patients who obtained a treatment with hepatitis C and obtained a sustained virologic response had much improved survival compared to patients who were not treated or who had no response to hepatitis C therapy. Clinical events such as end-stage liver disease, hepatocellular carcinoma, and death did not occur amongst patients achieving an SVR. Therefore, what is seen here is the dramatic effect of clearing and curing the hepatitis C virus in terms of downstream complications of liver disease. An approach to assessing HIV patients for immediate or deferred hepatitis C treatment is shown here. Most importantly, the decision to start hepatitis C treatment or to wait is driven by baseline fibrosis of the co-infected patient. Patients who have been identified as having advanced fibrosis, suggesting that they are at increased risk of hepatic decompensation, are clearly the candidates in whom immediate treatment should be considered. Patients with no or minimal fibrosis have a lower probability of further progression of liver disease and can easily wait in the setting of successful HIV therapy. Secondly, stable control of HIV disease is an important factor in the decision-making process because preventing immunodeficiency slows fibrosis progression. Therefore, current USA and European guidelines agree that all patients with hepatitis C should be considered for HIV therapy, and specifically patients with CD4 counts under 500 strongly be considered to initiate antiretroviral therapy to optimize hepatitis C treatment success. If a patient has a CD4 count over 500 and has not yet been treated with HIV antivirals, that decision can be deferred until hepatitis C therapy has been completed. Staging is disease assessment with meaningful information for patients and providers. Liver stage is really the CD4 count of hepatitis C. It lets us know the risk that a patient may have in terms of complications and where they are in their disease. Staging allows us to screen for hepatocellular carcinoma and for varices. We have several modalities that can be used: liver biopsy, blood markers, elastography, or a combination. In this slide, non-invasive serum-based tests for detection of fibrosis are shown. The first two, the FibroTest and the FibroSpect, are combined several markers of fibrosis degradation products that are analyzed in an algorithmic approach to give an indication of the likelihood of fibrosis in a statistical manner. The last three tests, the APRI, the FORNS, and the FIB4, are determined by laboratory values that are available in most patients or on common chemistry panels. The next slide shows the relative sensitivity and specificity of most of the commonly used tests. For example, utilizing the APRI score with a cutoff of 1 gives a sensitivity of 77% and a specificity of 75% for the detection of cirrhosis. If the cutoff is lowered to, say, 0.7, the sensitivity and specificity are approximately 75 and 72%, respectively. Overall, these tests are inexpensive, easily available, and very useful in predicting the presence or absence of advanced fibrosis. The newest test available is the FibroScan, which is based on elastography. In this test, the probe induces an elastic wave through the liver as shown on the picture inserted on the right, similar to an ultrasound. The velocity of the wave is evaluated in a region located from about 2.5 to 6.5 centimeters below the skin surface. The patient then takes a series of respirations. The more fibrotic or cirrhotic a liver is, the less well it moves with inspiration and the stiffer it is. This measurement is calculated in units of kilopascals and correlates very effectively with liver fibrosis on biopsy results. The test is extremely accurate in assessing significant fibrosis, advanced fibrosis, and cirrhosis. The next slide represents a study of almost 300 co-infected patients who had liver stiffness measurements and biopsies at baseline and then were followed for a median of 5 years. What was looked at was survival and rates of liver decompensation. At the end of follow-up, elastography performed 8.4% better than liver biopsy in predicting survival and liver decompensation in these co-infected patients. Which staging test should be done? In summary, elastography provides the most useful current information when valid. Elastography and non-invasive tests can confidently rule out cirrhosis when they're concordant. Serum alone may confidently rule out cirrhosis. A biopsy done by specialists is indicated when there's discordance or there are other questions, but in general, one of these tests should be employed and done on each individual patient. Drug-drug interactions. While current hepatitis C direct-acting antivirals have no known activity against the HIV virus, these agents vary in their interaction potential with HIV antiviral agents and with a variety of other mechanisms. Bolsepravir and telaprevir are both substrates and inhibitors of cytochrome P450 and the drug transporter P-glycoprotein, and it predisposes these agents to many drug interactions. Cimeprevir is not a significant P450 inhibitor or inducer, but is still susceptible to drug-drug interactions caused by inhibitors of the CYP3A4 system. Like HIV, NRTI, sofosavir has a low potential for clinically significant drug interactions. There are few concomitant medications that are absolutely contraindicated with sofosavir, including a few of the anticonvulsants, antimycobacterials, and St. John's wort. Tipranovir is the only excluded antiretroviral. In general, newer direct-acting antivirals have much less potential for clinically significant drug interactions. Treatment guidelines. Available at the website www.hcvguidance.org are the current AASLD and IDSA treatment guidance recommendations for patients with co-infection. They are shown here for reference and are available on the website. The first slide shows preferred regimens for all genotypes 1 through 6. This slide shows alternative regimens for hepatitis C treatment in co-infection. And this last slide shows regimens that are no longer recommended or not recommended at all for treatment in co-infection, especially taking note of telaprevir and bolsepravir regimens, which are not recommended for administration in co-infection. The next slide shows a regimen that is anticipated to be available for patients with hepatitis C within the next 6 to 12 months. This is a combination of sofosfavir and ledipasvir. Ledipasvir is a replication complex inhibitor and has already shown efficacy in treatment in mono-infected patients. In this study, at the NIH, the ERADICATE study, a cohort of patients with genotype 1 HIV hepatitis C were treated with the combination of sofosfavir and ledipasvir, co-formulated into one pill given once a day. This was an open-label trial of 12 weeks of combination therapy in hepatitis C treatment-naive genotype 1 patients with co-infection. Cirrhotic patients were excluded from this trial. 80% had genotype A1A. The majority of men and most patients were African Americans. Patients were either naive to antiretrovirals, and those patients had a CD4 count over 500 or a HIV viral RNA under 40 copies, or if they were on antiretrovirals, their T cell count was at least 100 and their viral load for HIV was completely suppressed. In this study, all of the antiretroviral naive patients achieved an SVR12, and all of the on ART patients achieved an SVR4. SVR12 data for those patients is not currently available. So far, 100% of patients have obtained SVR on this combination. There was no change within the groups with regards to CD4 cell count, T cell percentages, or creatinine. As far as HIV status on treatment, there was a transient breakthrough of RNA in one patient due to missing 4 days of antiretroviral therapy. He was further resuppressed again when his regimen was reinstituted. Laboratory abnormalities were relatively few and far between. There were no deaths and no discontinuations in this study. In summary, liver disease is a leading cause of morbidity and mortality. Controlling HIV with antiretroviral therapy may slow progression of hepatitis C-related liver disease. All HIV patients should be screened for hepatitis C. First-generation protease inhibitors with pegylated interferon and ribavirin represent significant challenges and limitations and are no longer recommended for the treatment of co-infected individuals. Newer, once-daily, direct-acting antiviral treatments represent simpler and shorter treatment regimens, improved SVR rate with fewer adverse events. In fact, SVR rates now in co-infection can be considered nearly identical to what we see in hepatitis C mono-infected patients. These new regimens also minimize drug-drug interactions. Thank you for your attention.